Okay, this is Brahma Stuti, May 4th. We've concluded the prayers of Brahma, and now we want to, there's a few days left, we want to review the story as described, chapter 13, the Bhagavatam, Brahma Vimohan Lila, the bewilderment of Brahma. It's very nicely described in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. First, I want to read Kavi Karnapura's version of Brahma's prayers. At the end of chapter 14, Brahma Stuti, the last several verses, Brahma glorifies the Vrijvasis. Said even their homes are special because Krishna has his leelas in their homes by stealing their butter and interacting with them, running around their houses, playing with their children. And he's glorifying any birth. So these same verses of the Bhagavatam are phrased here by Kavi Karnapura in his chapter Bewilderment of Brahma, page 96, 97. Lord Brahma said, anyone born in Vrindavan is the most fortunate of men. Also blessed are those who contact the pollen from the lotus feet of your eternal associates. It's said that when the Rasik Vaishnavas, or the pure devotees of Radha and Krishna, are speaking Harikatha, or Bhagavad Gita, Gopika Katha, that their words are sprinkled with the dust particles from the feet of Krishna. And those dust particles, those pollen particles from Krishna's feet, actually come from the breast of Radharani. And the words that are spoken by the Rasik Vaishnavas, Radha Krishna Bhaktas, they're sprinkled with that pollen. When one sits with such an advanced devotee and hears him speak Harikatha, then some of those pollen particles filter into the ear and sprinkle on the heart and give great nourishment and satisfaction, fulfillment to the inner heart of the devotee who hears such wonderful Rajalila. And Brahma is glorifying. He said, blessed are those who contact the pollen from the lotus feet of your eternal associates. After all, Sri Krishna, your beloved family, your beloved friends and character opulences in your holy dham of Vrindavan are nothing but expansions of your very self. Therefore, O my Lord Sri Krishna, please allow me to take birth as a bird, beast, human being, or even as a creeper in Vrindavan. I desire such a position, although it sounds insignificant, because you derive great pleasure from the service rendered by all these creatures, such as the cows, bulls, birds, and parrots. Therefore, by taking any type of birth in Vrindavan, I will be able to give up my false ego and attain the opportunity to serve your lotus feet, which are the storehouse of unlimited treasures. So we don't have, in this life, we don't have the opportunity to have that fortune of taking birth in Vrindavan. Because Brahma is saying there's a certain effect that if one is born in Vrindavan, that his false ego must be given up. And then you can get the opportunity to serve Krishna's feet. So anyone who's lived for some time in Vrindavan, they also, although not born here, the very practice of living in Vrindavan is also a good way to get free from your false ego. Because the environment is so harsh, and the people are so special, and the animals and the creatures, one way or another, they strip you of your false identifications and your misconceptions about who you are, what you think you are. Within a few years, 5, 10, if not 20 or more years, your transcendental persona, your actual spiritual identity as a humbled servant of Radha and Krishna begins to slowly emerge by the mercy of all these parrots and monkeys and dogs and pigs and people and Brahmins and Baniyas and Rikshawalas and trees and weather and cold and hot and other such situations and persons and places and happenings in Vrindavan, they act as a very cleansing effect on the false ego, the hunkar. It's magic. It is said that if one can pass 12 years in the holy dham of Sri Vrindavan, he can attain siddhi, perfection. For a Vaishnava, for a Gaudiya Vaishnava, perfection is Trinadapi Sunichena, Tvari Vasahishuna, Amanina Amanidena Kirtaniya Sadhari. To become so much free from all, become so much free from false ego that we can always take shelter of the holy name in all circumstances and all situations, in pain or pleasure, or gain or loss, or honor or dishonor. And be steady in all situations. To be decorated with these four qualities. This means that one, in order to be prideless and to show respect to others, one must be free from his false ego. And as that false ego dissolves in the fire of Krishna bhakti, then we become nishta, we become steady in bhakti, and exhibit these qualities of steadiness, which are depicted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the third verse of Shikshastakam. Very humble and very tolerant. And Vrindavan has that equalizing effect. Most people stay for a few years and they can't take it. They crack. They run away one way or the other. They get this disease or that disease. But Brahma goes on, Kavikarnapur explains his prayers. The Vrijvasis are the most glorious of all living entities. They have attained the summit of all pious activities. Although, Krishna, you are the shelter of everything in creation, you take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan, the Vrijvasis. Krishna takes shelter of the Vrijvasis. Everyone's looking for shelter. Oh God, give me shelter. Sharanagati Prabhu, Sharanagati. Oh God, I surrender unto you. Please protect me. Please help me. Please uplift me. You're my only shelter. There's no other shelter but God. But God jumps into the arms of Nanda Maharaj and jumps into Yashoda's arms and cries at night for Radharani's embrace. And he needs the shelter of his devotees. And he cries without it. So everyone in the whole universe is taking shelter of Bhagavan. And Bhagavan where does Bhagavan take shelter? Oftentimes people challenge when we present the concept of God and they say, who created God? The buck stops there. God means there's no one beyond him. He's it. He is the origin. In the same way, we take shelter of God, Bhagavan or God, the Supreme Lord. He's everywhere, every religion. They say, oh, God is a shelter. God, give me shelter. Because we know we need it. Because we're so dependent and so tiny and so fragile and helpless in this powerful, ferocious material world, we certainly need shelter from the elements. Our body needs shelter from the elements, and our mind needs shelter from our friends, and our soul needs shelter from our karmas. So in all these ways we usually turn to God if we're intelligent. But then God himself, it says he has a shelter also. His shelter is the Vrijvasis. And when he's in Dwarka and he wakes up in a palace of Rukmini, And he doesn't wake up, he's deeply asleep, apparently unconscious. And they call in the Vaidya, and various doctors and medical assistants, and they say, what is wrong? And Rukmini says, I don't know, it's very unusual. He's not moving from bed. He's simply moaning something, unintelligible words. I can't understand. He's running a high fever. And he won't talk to anyone. He's mumbling to himself and crying. His entire pillow is soaking wet with his tears. It's a very strange, bewildering malady that's affected our Dwarkanath, our Dwarkadish. So by chance, Narada Muni came on the scene. And he was able somehow to get through to the Lord, to penetrate his bhavas and ecstasies, having some familiarity with the inner heart of the Lord, even unbeknownst to the queens of Dwarka. Narada Muni has some access. Because he had been in Vrindavan, he had done austerities in Naradakund, and became Naradiya, or Naradi, Naradi Gopi. So Narada Muni said, what's wrong, Krishna? He said, I have an incredible headache. My head is paining. I was a cover. I actually had a heartache. His heart was cracking, not his head was cracking. But he said that in a hidden way, Parokshavad, Avahitavav. He covered his true feelings to hide his feelings from the queens. Narada understood, and he said, "My Lord, what can cure your headache?" He said, "Only the dust of the feet of my devotees." So Narada tried to collect dust from the Vrishnis and Yadavas, Uddhava, Vasudev, Devaki, Rukmini, Satyabhama, the other queens and members of the Yadava dynasty, living in Dwarka. No success, everyone was quite afraid of the dust of their feet. And Narada Muni thought, "Let me go to Vrindavan, because this is Krishna's shelter." So Krishna's shelter is the Brijvasis. He takes shelter of Brijvasis because only they can cure his headache and only they can satisfy him. So you take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan. "Although you are matchless, my dear Lord Sri Krishna, and the omnipotent truth, you make friends with the Brijvasis and live amongst them as their greatest treasure. What could be more amazing than this? O Lord of creation, you expanded yourself as thousands of calves to drink the milk of Braja's cows. Who can estimate the limits of the good fortune of these pious cows? Lord Shiva, myself, and the other presiding deities of the 11 senses utilize the senses of the Brijvasis as the cups through which we repeatedly drink the intoxicating beverage of the honey nectar of your lotus feet. By this divine connection with the Brijvasis, we have also become fortunate. However, the good fortune enjoyed by the Brijvasis, who directly and intimately serve you, is beyond description." So after offering these prayers, glorifying the Brijvasis and praying for some birth someday and some form or other in the land of Vrindavan, Brahma circumambulated Krishna, then returned to Satyaloka. Chakradhara Krishna rejoined the calves and sat peacefully. He rejoined the calves that were sitting peacefully, munching on fresh grass. Rotating his cowherding stick above his head, Krishna signaled to the calves to go back home, back to Godhead. So that's the conclusion of the prayers. And now, the Leela itself, we want to recapture the Leela, the bewilderment of Brahma, Brahma Vimohan Leela from Ananda Vrindavan Champu. That's very nice. Basically, this is just something to listen to and try to envision the poetry and pictures of the language of the great Kavi, Srila Kavi Karnapur, describing the pastimes, which is also described in Bhagavat Puran by Shukadeva Goswami. Krishna was walking with the cowherd boys who were carrying bundles of delicious food items which their mothers had prepared in the morning. These bundles of food were tied on sticks that rested on their shoulders. On the way home, Krishna noticed an ideal spot for a picnic just beside the Yamuna. "Look, my friends. Hey, suckers. The birds are not flying here." Of course, maybe he's saying that. That was just a nice way of saying that birds haven't pooped over here. Because they wanted to sit down for a picnic. Because if they're flying, then when they fly, they usually, drop some files. And then to unload their files, and may fall on your head when you sit down for your picnic. Unless you're under a tree, that can be dangerous too. Sometimes you have Harikata under the trees when we move around Braj, and it's not so auspicious sometimes. So Krishna's a practical person. You want to have a picnic, you have to look out for the happiness and safety and protection of all your friends. There's nothing worse than sitting down for a tiffin picnic, having a bunch of birds mess up your preparations. So the birds aren't flying overhead here. It's a nice quiet place, pleasing to the eyes, and as comfortable as the lap of a mother. Now I don't have that vision when we walk down to the Yamuna at Keshi Ghat or Shringhar Ghat, and walk across the sands and past all the pumpkins growing in the sand, and to the quiet bank of the Yamuna, I don't know that I see that the sands there, the banks of that Yamuna, they look as comfortable as the lap of a mother. But in the, I guess in Krishna's Leela, then Yamuna and her banks become in any rasa that Krishna wants to feel. If Yamuna wants to be in Vatsalya Ras, then Yamuna can be in Vatsalya Ras. Yamuna and her banks, her tata, Yamuna tata. This Yamuna is Vishaka's expansion. Vishaka is Madhurya Mai, she's Swarup Shakti. Kayavyo of Radharani, so she has Vatsalya Bhav and Sakya Bhav. All Bhavas are there, Madhurya. So she's relishing serving Krishna, providing her sandy banks and making them as comfortable as the lap of a mother. Listen, hey Sakas, there are no footprints of any animals on the bank. Therefore, it's a perfect picnic site. Let the calves graze nearby while we honor Prasad. After hearing the statement of Krishna, who is the supreme transcendence and a marvelous person at the same time. That's a very nice play on the words. He said, he's God. Well, he's a great guy also. Yeah, my husband is a prime minister, but he's a nice guy too. You know, he's down to earth. You can joke with him. You can play table tennis with him. He's not lost in the White House somewhere. He's an average guy. You can play basketball with him on the weekends. So he's the supreme transcendence, and he's a marvelous person at the same time. The coward boys replied, Krishna, you and I are the same. Since we feel hungry, you must also feel hungry. So let's take prasad. Krishna agreed, yes, what a splendid idea. Let's sit here and take prasad. A circle of tall green trees whose branches joined overhead to form a natural canopy shaded the picnic spot. The earth, or the sandy banks, were as pure and white as powdered camphor, and they looked as though they had been washed with liquid silver. A gentle breeze, filled with droplets of water, scented with the sweet smell of blossoming lotuses, cooled and refreshed the entire area of the picnic site. That peaceful wind felt soothing to the touch and created a pleasing atmosphere along the bank of the Yamuna. With his golden effulgence, attractive bluish complexion, and elegant yellow dress, Krishna looked like the whirl of a lotus. Surrounded by a thousand petals, as he sat in the center, encircled by the lines of coward boys, Krishna's intimate friends sat nearest him. They appeared like rays of the sun sitting in rows around the Lord. The innermost rays glowed with a reddish hue. As the rays moved further from the center, they displayed a gradation of colors from orange to yellow, green, blue, and violet. This rainbow-like display of colors looked attractive. That's quite a psychedelic picnic. I mean, it's really colorful array of lights and wind and colors and rupam and sparsham and ganda and everything. Although the boys sat at different distances from the Lord, they each felt that Krishna was looking directly at them when he glanced their way. This pastime confirms the words of the learned sages who claim that everywhere are Krishna's eyes and faces as well as his arms and legs. We often say that the Bhagavad Gita is the tattva and the praman or the proof is the Bhagavatam. So in Gita there's a verse, sarvato panipadam tat sarvato kshi shiromukam sarvata shruti maloke sarvam avritatishtati. Says that everywhere are Krishna's eyes and faces, everywhere his hands and legs, pani and padam. Sarvatak Pani Padam. Pani means hand. Pada means feet. Aksha, eye. Mukham, face. Everywhere Krishna's eyes and faces, hands and legs. Well, here's an example. The pastime Bhagavat, chapter 13, the coward boy's picnic beside the Yamuna. Krishna was in one place and the thousands of boys were all around him, and everywhere Krishna's eyes were and faces were directly on them. So this is the example, concrete example of the philosophy. The Gita is the philosophy, and the Praman or the proof is the Leelas of Krishna in Bhagavatam and elsewhere. At that time Krishna said, "Hey suckers, please take all the foodstuffs off your carrying poles." The full tiffins of the coward boys emitted brilliant effulgences in all directions. The coward boys placed their prasad on flowers or leaves or rocks or barks of trees or on their chadars. Some held the prasad in the auspicious lines of their palms, and a few put it on their strongly built thighs. Other boys artistically arrayed their best prasad on leaf plates and affectionately offered it to Krishna. Krishna ate. He spoke sweet words that washed over his lips like a stream of nectar. Moving his hands in expressive mudras, Krishna took great pleasure entertaining the boys with witty words. The boys responded by telling funny jokes that filled Krishna with laughter. The blissful ha ha ha. The blissful smiles on the lotus faces of the coward boys revealed the happiness of their hearts. Well, that's something to meditate on while chanting japa. If you're aspiring for Sakiras, this particular setting of Krishna and his devotees, whom one will follow, and Sakiras, one will follow Sri Dham and Subal, and their mannerisms, and their feelings, and their leelas, and their interactions with the Lord, and meditate on their pastimes to develop his own attachment and feelings for the Lord. The blissful smiles on the lotus faces of the coward boys revealed the happiness of their hearts. Well, certainly no one could imagine a more blissful setting than to be sitting in Vrindavan beside the river Yamuna, looking face to face with Krishna and exchange and having lunch with him directly, not ringing a bell and going outside the curtain and making an offering. Ding 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 ding. Looking at your watch, counting the minutes, 10, 11, 12, 20 minutes. Iram avrasaran vedyan. And string Krishna, you know. And taking the prasadam off to the transfer room. And transferring the mahaprasad to the transfer tray. And taking the transfer tray to the prasadam hall, where the assembled devotees dive into that tray with great enthusiasm. There's no transfer tray, there's no bells, there's just Krishna and your heart and his heart and your smiles and his smiles. So this is a nice meditation. That bliss, what is that blissful smile on the lotus faces of the coward boys, revealing the happiness of their hearts? Krishna's warm personal dealings increase the affection felt by his boyfriends. The whole scene appeared breathtaking. Of course, we may fall asleep when we hear this because we're tired, but the whole scene is actually breathtaking. With a flute tucked tightly in his waist on the right side and a buffalo horn and cow driving stick tucked on his left side, Krishna's thin, perfectly shaped waist attracted the minds of everyone. Krishna ate some pickles with his right hand while holding a nice preparation of yogurt and rice in his left palm. Krishna is an advocate of the two-hand eating style, like American sandwiches, submarine sandwiches, or pizzas. I think even, well, pizza you have to use I guess one hand you can eat a pizza with, I suppose, if you're a devotee. But in the West, they have these sandwiches, two hands, a left hand, right hand sandwich. And Krishna's also eating that way. Not that we imitate. There's anusharan, nanokaran. This is Leela. First get there and then imitate. First get in, enter Krishna's Leela, then think about putting yogurt and rice in your left hand. Until then, if you do that in this sadhaka roop, you'll get cracked. Your mother will crack you. Or your guru bhai, or your guru. Or your improper behavior. So Krishna's eating pickles. With his hands moistened by these different foods, Krishna looked magnificently beautiful. That's another meditation. Prasad, bhog meditation. The moist, Krishna's moist hands as he takes Narayan Prasad that his mother offered to the Lakshmi Narayan deity in Nandagram that morning. Even Krishna's taking Vishnu Prasad. And every other kind of prasad he gets from the coward boys. In etiquette in India, when one is serving guests in the house, the grihasthas, it's one of the primary duties of grihasthas is to serve, it's hospitality, to serve guests, atithi narayan. Atithi narayan, atithi, outside of the time. Some people come to your house, knock on the door and say, "Oh, Maya, oh, Mataji, I'm hungry. Some food." So the tradition was, of course now there's so many terrorists and thieves and rapists and robbers, maybe you can't observe these rules of Manu Samhita and Dharma Shastras. But even if the enemy comes to your door, you're supposed to treat so nicely that they forget their enmity. Nevertheless, if someone would come outside the time, unexpected, whether we say unexpected guest or untimely guest, it was considered that this was Narayan testing you, Narayan form. Therefore, the grihasthas are ever ready to serve guests with some dry fruits or some type of food, or even immediately they'll cook some puris and sabji within 10 minutes. It was very fast. You can make hot sabji and puris, which is satisfying to anyone, any traveler. This is the etiquette. This is the dharma, grihastha dharma. When one has guests and having a proper feast, feeding relatives or friends or sadhus, then the host has to be very attentive to the serving. What is he attending to? He's attending to the plates of the guests. What food is getting less? Put some more. Which food is he liking more? Give him more. Which food is he finished? Add some more. Water cup is low. Add some water. Dal is getting finished. Add some dal. And he also wants to make sure that the fingers never become dry. This is the basic law, then it has its details. But the principle is, the fingers of your guest should never become dry until he finishes eating. So as long as your fingers are always going from one preparation to the ghee-soaked sabji, to the samosa, to the dal, and to the puri, and to the sweet rice, and the fingers will always be wet with different types of savories and dals and pakoris and chutneys and sweets and nectar drinks. But somehow the guest is just standing there waiting for something and you're spaced out in the kitchen or on the cell phone in the kitchen and his fingers go dry while he's waiting, then that's a big offense. The fingers of your guest go dry because you're inattentive to give them the proper preparations or too slow to deliver fast enough, and their fingers get momentarily dry due to the dry air, and that moisture of the prasad dries up, then it's considered an offense. And when mothers are training their daughters, traditionally in Indian etiquette, they would tell about this idea. So it's particular. That's why it's particularly mentioned here, that his hands moistened by these different foods. Krishna looked magnificently beautiful. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and other denizens of heaven marveled at the extraordinary sight of Krishna eating with his friends in the forest. They were amazed. Imagine they're all, hey, Shiva, look at this guy. Yeah, Brahma, look. He's Bhagavan. He's God. Come on. Indra, what do you think? Look at the way he's just, no crystal dining table, no crystal glasses. What is this? No golden plates. They're just sitting there putting their food on a bark of a tree, on a leaf. One guy's got it on his leg. He's just putting the food, taking the food out of the tiffin and putting it on his leg, eating off his leg. They're eating with their right hand, left hand. What is this? We can never invite them here to Indraloka. All of our gala parties and spectacular parties we have here, they would be the laughing stock of all the demigods, the way they carry on, like a bunch of they're eating like a bunch of monkeys. They're amazed. Due to his false ego, Brahma thought himself the supreme creator. But after witnessing the awesome power of Krishna killing Agasura, he became astounded and he thought, Krishna is the supreme controller of everything. Nevertheless, let me test his actual position. As one becomes a laughing stock by trying to measure the ocean with a yardstick or measuring a sky with a handspan, similarly, Brahma became a laughing stock by his foolish attempt to fathom the unlimited transcendental power of Krishna by purloining his calves. Although similarities exist between Krishna and Brahma, or between a glowworm and the sun, the differences are vast. Both Brahma and Krishna have illusory energy, but Krishna and Krishna alone enchants Brahma and the entire creation. Jagat Manohar. The gopas forgot all about the calves while they were happily taking prasad with Krishna. It appeared as if the gopis' lips bathed in the radiance of their teeth as they joked and laughed. During this time, Brahma stealthily stole their calves. After some time, when the coward boys looked for the calves, they could not find them. Feeling sad and helpless, they appealed to Krishna, who is greater than Lord Shiva. Oh, Priya Bandhu, we cannot find any of our calves. It seems they've wandered far away, being greedy to eat fresh grass. Come, let us enter the forest and search for them. While listening, Krishna's face looked more charming than a splendid full moon. When you read the writing of Kavi Karnapur and Ananda Vrindavan Champu or Krishnaika Komudi or his other works, it appears that you're watching a movie. Well, he's describing minutely the scenes, the facial expressions, the radiance, as if you were watching a movie and you say, oh, he's wearing this color clothes and he's like this or that. It's really a bird's eye view or a camera's eye view of the pastimes, as if he's just standing there. He's shooting the movie and writing down the script as he's shooting it, and that's becoming Ananda Vrindavan Champu. So in other words, he's seeing this in his prem drishti, his eyes of love. Leela pravesh. He's entered a leela and has sakhi form also. And his sarup. And he's a guna chuda sakhi, something like that. And he's seeing it. So it's easy to describe something you're seeing. I'm sitting in the room and some devotees are sitting here listening to class, and one devotee is looking like this. I mean, while listening, Krishna's face, that means he's seeing Krishna listen to the coward boys stating about their cows, and his face looks more charming. Smiling compassionately, Krishna spoke to mitigate the fear of his friends. Oh, my dear friends, do not stop eating your picnic feast. Just stay here beside Yamuna. I will personally find the calves and bring them to you. The idea, the principle is astounding, that Krishna, he's in the middle of a feast with all of his friends. There's nothing more pleasurable than laughing and joking and eating with your friends, a picnic. And he's saying, listen, you all stay here, I'll serve you. Let you enjoy. So we say Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, supreme controller, supreme owner of everything, and supreme friend of everyone. Bhaktaram yaga tapasarva logmeshram. But here we see he's the supreme servant of everyone. Krishna is the supreme servant of his devotees. Sarva, he's a Parama Sevite, Parama Krishna Bhakta, Parama Krishna Bhakta Sevite. He's the supreme servant of his devotees. So listen, you stay here, don't stop eating, enjoy your feast. I'll stop eating, I'll give up my feast. Could you imagine you're in the middle of the Sunday feast and you served the whole feast to 300 people, and took a couple hours, and finally you sat down with the servers. Everybody has these huge plates piled as high as Mount Govardhan. And everyone's eating and laughing. And someone says, the temple commander comes up because he already finished. So, stop eating. You have to get in the temple van. I want you to go and pick up Maharaj. He's at the airport. He just came in. And he's getting a flight. He's going on to Cambodia and Thailand in 1 hour. You have to bring him to the temple. Oh, can you get somebody else to do it? I mean, right in the middle of a feast, and try Gurudev, but then the temple commander says, you can take your prasad with you, put it on the dash, eat it on the way. Oh my God, oh, no thanks. It's a little hard to drive and take the Sunday feast at the same time, although it's been done before. At any rate, Krishna's not thinking like that. Krishna immediately put down his food and went to collect the calves of all his friends. Krishna looked very attractive, walking with his flute, stick, and buffalo horn tucked in his dhoti. The wonderful effulgence of Krishna's body illuminated the entire forest, although the area abounded with fresh grass. Krishna did not find hoof prints or any other sign of the calves, even after searching in all directions. Much to his surprise, when Krishna returned to the banks of the Yamuna, he could not find any of his coward boyfriends. Though temporarily exhibiting a touch of bewilderment, Krishna displayed his omniscience by concluding that Brahma, the supreme creator of the material world, had succumbed to his, Krishna's, illusory potency and stolen both the calves and his boyfriends. The all-knowing Lord Krishna then employed his spiritual energy to expand himself into the exact forms of each one of the missing calves and boys. Krishna miraculously appeared with all of their attributes, including their individual moods, mannerisms, dress ornaments, and carrying sticks. Then playing his sweet flute, Krishna gladly proceeded home to Vrindavan. That's interesting. Krishna takes everything in stride. Imagine you come home and your house is burned up, and your wife and kids are burned up in the house. There's just some rubble and stubble and smoldering ashes, and you're at 102 Main Street where your house once stood. You say, oh, okay, well, that's that. Get in the car, go back to work. I mean, it's all the day's work. Krishna says, the calves are gone. I don't see any footprints. Oh, my boyfriends are all gone. Okay, all right. Hey, Yogamaya. you called Yogamaya and was Isha Shakti and Gatana Agatana Patiasi Shakti, and immediately he expanded and business as usual, went home with all his friends and cows, as he does every day, as if nothing ever happened. And he did that every day for a whole year. The Supreme, then playing his flute, Krishna gladly proceeded home to Vrindavan. The Supreme Lord Krishna directly creates everything in this universe. As usual, the coward boys, who were now expansions of Krishna himself, like usual days, they danced gleefully to the captivating sound of Krishna's flute. We read in Brahma Samhita that every step is a dance, and everywhere the entire air is pervaded by the sweet sound of Krishna's flute, and everyone is moving and jumping and dancing happily and excitedly to the sweet tunes of Krishna's Vamsi and Murali. So they The boys dance their way into the forest in the morning. Now they're dancing their ways back home in the evening. Every step is a dance. All the words are like poetry, and the water is like nectar. This is Vrindavan. So imagine Krishna is playing and you're dancing. And Krishna is playing for every devotee and making every devotee dance. The coward boys, of course, they were actually he himself. But even on ordinary days, Krishna would play his flute, and the cows and calves would dance down the footpath back to the barn. Of course, now he's taking care of the calves and Bali Leela. So the calves would prance with their tails in the air and their front legs and back legs bounding. And they prance down the footpath, and Krishna, the boys running behind. Krishna's playing his flute, and the boys are dancing, laughing. Very beautiful, wonderful, happy scene. Spiritual bliss. The boys were dancing gleefully to the captivating sound of Krishna's flute. The frolicking steps of the coward boys enriched Mother Earth with the quality of bliss. It's called contact high. Sometimes some person is so happy and blissful that if you go and spend some time with him, although you're morose and sad and unhappy, within a few minutes you're also happy and smiling and laughing. By contact. Some of that bhav, it's called bhava bhas. Some reflection is there. Shadow. But then outside of his association, you're back to your old morose and unhappy attached self, meditating on various impermanent objects of delusion. But in association, so the earth was feeling blissful. These boys were blissfully dancing. Their frolicking steps enriched Mother Earth with the quality of bliss. So the bhumi became Ananda Bhumi. Whistling on their panpipes, they called their beloved calves and returned to Vrindavan. When the coward boys arrived home, their mothers showered the same affection on them that they had previously shown to Krishna. Overflowing with parental love, each mother felt unlimited joy upon seeing her individual son, who actually was none other than Krishna himself. Previously, before Krishna had become all the coward boys, all the different mothers of Braj would show more affection for Krishna than their own children. Now that's a good lesson for all Grihasthas. Unfortunately, the Grihasthas show unlimitedly 24 hours a day affection for their little byproducts, their little tiny amshas and expansions known as my daughter and my son. My son, my daughter. They're completely and utterly and hopelessly attached to the max. And to have more attachment for Krishna than their own children is the lesson of the gopis of Vrindavan, for all of us taking shiksha from the Braja gopis. Gopi anugatya. E nevedeno dara saki anugatya kara. So Vrindadevi is teaching us how to, we follow in her footsteps, we can learn how to love and serve Radha and Krishna. So the gopis, they would greet their sons coming home, happy to see their sons, but they also go and embrace Krishna. And when they did that, they think, oh, how fortunate is Yashoda. I wish we had Krishna as our son. Anyway, we have our son. And we have our daughter, daughters and sons. We're happy. So this is a nice lesson to all the members of the Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas that are married. We should think, oh, I have my son, I have my daughter. But I wish Krishna was my son. And I show more affection for Krishna than my own son and daughter. This is a lesson of the Bhagavat. Bhagavad Shiksha. Of course, have we learned it? Do we have Shiksha Vigyan? Bhagavad Shiksha Vigyan. Have we realized this wonderful teaching of the Brijvasi? I mean, the Brajagopis. It's highly unlikely and doubtful. Because crossing over attachment is next to impossible without the mercy. Overflowing with parental love, each mother, gopi, elderly gopi, felt unlimited joy upon seeing her son, who now was none other than Krishna himself. Previously, the Brijvasis had more affection for Krishna than their own children. But now, for 1 year, they displayed ever-increasing affection toward their sons, who are none other than the expanded forms of Krishna. The cowherd boy expansions of Subal, Sridham, and others pleased their mothers with their usual activities of bathing, eating, and dressing. Unlike other days, however, on that day the boys did not describe the pastimes they had enjoyed with Krishna. Their calves ran to their respective mothers, who affectionately licked their bodies again and again, merging in an unlimited ocean of bliss. Overwhelmed with parental love, the cows lowed deeply with deep loving voices and then slept with their calves. And those calves were Krishna. So that's a lucky cow. When Krishna returned home, Nanda picked him up, embraced him, and placed him on his lap. Nanda feared that his beard might scratch Krishna's delicate face. These are the intimate touches that are overlooked in the Bhagavatam, which is a little bit of a summary because Krishna only had 7 days. Couldn't get into too many details. The basic pastime is there. Nanda was afraid that his rough beard might scratch Krishna's delicate face, which is softer than the petals of a lotus. Lifting up Krishna's turban, Nanda Maharaj smelled Krishna's head and then affectionately kissed him. Although enjoying the highest pleasure just by smelling his son's head, Nanda cried when Krishna jumped off his lap and ran to Mother Yashoda, the perfect form of parental love. Yashoda lovingly fondled her son, massaged him with fragrant oil, and bathed him to remove the dust from grazing the calves. Then Yashoda dressed Krishna in fresh clothing and fed him sumptuously. After satisfying her invincible son, who is the embodiment of eternity, Yashoda put him to rest on a comfortable bed covered with a mattress as white as the foam of milk. At sunrise the next day, Yashoda and the other mothers prepared their sons for going to the forest by carefully decorating them with different ornaments. After taking breakfast, all the boys met Krishna in the courtyard of his house at Nandalaya. Since he could not proceed to the forest without pleasing his parents, Krishna allowed Nanda and Yashoda to caress him to their heart's content. Even then, they insisted on accompanying him to the edge of the forest. Collecting all his intimate friends and their calves, who were his own expansions, Krishna walked toward the forest. Krishna took the cowherd boys and the calves to pasture near Govardhan Hill. When the cows that were already grazing on Govardhan Hill saw Krishna, they ran down the hill so fast that they appeared to be flying. Leaving their own calves and newborns behind on top of the hill, the cows displayed intense parental love toward Krishna and the calves who were accompanying him. In reality, Krishna had expanded as all these calves. Though trying desperately, the cowherd men could not stop the cows with their sticks. Impelled by strong motherly affection, the cows mooed lovingly, "Maw, maw," while smelling and licking these calves, Krishna calves, Krishna Vatsa, Vatsa Krishna. The cows neither moved nor ate any grass. On the other hand, the boys could not restrain their calves. Krishna could not restrain Krishna because the boys were Krishna and the calves were Krishna. Neither the boys nor the cowherd men could separate the cows from those calves because the cows wanted to love Krishna, and no one can come in the way of Krishna's love for his devotees, and no one can come in the way of the devotees' love for Krishna. So even Krishna, who was these, Krishna himself, Bhagavan, who was all these boys and their fathers, the coward boys' fathers, together were trying to pull the cows away and the calves away so the calves would not drink all the milk of the mothers. But they couldn't do it. Even though the calves were actually Krishna, Krishna couldn't pull away Krishna. Because the Bhakta, Bhagavan Bhakta, Prem Sambandha is so tight and so powerful, no one can break it. The coward men felt pain in their legs from running after the cows. Upon seeing their sons, however, the expanded forms of Krishna, they forgot all pains and immersed in an ocean of parental love. Well, that's a nice encouragement for all of us that are suffering in material existence. We are suffering the pangs and pains of material existence. Adiyatmika klesha, adibhotika, daivika klesha. The pangs of disease and pangs and pains of old age, anxiety and frustration and disappointment, discouragement and disease, and the ultimate frustration, disappointment of death. So we're suffering all these pains. As a coward men, their legs are aching from running after the cows. But when they saw Krishna, they forgot all their pains. So this is the solution. If we want to become painless, we have to have darshan of Krishna. And that is the ultimate medicine to remove all pains. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. They forgot all pains and immersed in an ocean of parental love. The coward men felt supremely blissful from embracing their tender sons, smelling their heads and kissing them. Placing their sons on their laps, the fathers cried affectionately out of great joy. Well, who wouldn't if they had Krishna sitting on their lap? Their chest drenched from the tears pouring from their eyes. With great difficulty and reluctance, the coward men gradually stopped embracing their sons and allowed them to return to Krishna. The coward men allowed those Krishnas to return to Krishna. But Krishna was their disguised as their sons. Balaram, although happy to see the intense love shared between the cows and calves, felt doubtful about it. Since the calves had already grown up and stopped sucking milk from their mothers, he wondered, aha, how astonishing. My affection and that of all the Brijvasis towards these boys and calves is increasing as never before. It perfectly resembles the love we all feel for Krishna, the supersoul of every living entity. This must be the display of the Lord's inconceivable energy, Achintya Shakti. Otherwise, how could I, the elder brother of that unborn Lord who wields the disc that destroys illusory energy, become bewildered by some mystical display of Maya? Therefore, I will inquire from that crest jewel of all mystics. Thinking like this, Balaram said, Krishna, I am amazed. I have faith that you possess superior intelligence beyond my comprehension. Now I can see that you alone have manifested yourself in the different forms of these calves and boys. They are none other than expansions of your personal energy as four-armed Narayan forms. Please tell me, why have you done this? Honoring Balaram's request, Yashoda Nandan replied, satisfied him by describing the pastime from beginning to end. No one can count the unlimited waves of Krishna's blissful pastimes. After waiting a moment in his celestial time standard, Brahma returned to Vrindavan. Brahma was totally astonished to see Krishna playing with the boys and calves just as before even though a complete year had passed by earthly calculation. Greatly bewildered, Brahma thought, are these the same calves I stole? Or have some other calves appeared in their place? Actually, it appears the calves that I stole are all illusory, and that these are the real calves. Brahma's pride being crushed, he chastised himself for attempting to show off his paltry power before the unlimited potency of Lord Krishna, who mystifies the entire universe. Rather than bewildering the Lord, Brahma perplexed himself with his mystic force. This offensive act filled Brahma with great remorse. As Brahma gazed at the boys, he saw them as four-hand Vishnu forms, fully decorated with priceless ornaments, holding the four symbols of the Lord, conch, lotus, club, and disc. These Vishnu forms embodied unlimited bliss and knowledge, and their combined effulgences surpassed the light of millions of suns and moons. Their bodily hair stood erect in ecstasy, and the perspiration coming from their bodies resembled the globe-like universes rising from the pores of Lord Vishnu. All these Vishnu forms of bluish hue wore yellow silken garments that glowed like lightning. They were bedecked with jeweled earrings, crowns, necklaces, armlets, and glittering golden bangles that jingled sweetly. Swarms of hovering bees, buzzing bees, hovered above the fresh, tender tulsi garlands that hung down to their thighs. The tiny tinkling bells suspended from these Vishnu Rupa's golden belts emitted delicate, enticing sounds. Then Brahma saw that space, the time factor, the three modes of material nature, the five elements, the seasons, the eight mystic perfections, the nine planets, the ten directions, the presiding deities of the senses, the 14 manus, and all the other aspects of material creation had been subjugated by the potency of the Lord. They had taken personal forms to worship the Lord. Those Vishnu forms were whose transcendental bodies shone with beauty and opulence, blessed everyone with their compassion and sidelong glances. So this Brahma is getting really bewildered. One can perceive this truth only by the mercy of the Lord. Understanding Brahma's bewilderment, Krishna at once removed the curtain of his yoga maya. Then Brahma realized that Vasudeva is everything. And he immediately saw Vasudeva, the absolute truth, standing before him in Vrindavan as Krishna, with a stick, flute, and buffalo horn tucked in a sash around his waist, a lump of rice and yogurt in his left hand, the absolute truth, Sri Krishna was searching everywhere for the calves and his coward friends. The transcendental form of Krishna acts as a rasayana, life-giving tonic to all his friends. Upon seeing this, Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and fell down before the Lord like a golden stick. He touched the lotus feet of Krishna with the tips of his four crowns, which appeared like the four golden peaks of Mount Sumeru. The effulgence of the costly jewels on Brahma's crowns seemed to be running out to touch the lotus feet of Krishna. The unlimited radiance of Krishna's toe rings, however, neutralized that effulgence. Merely by the touch of Krishna's splendid toenails, the effulgence of Brahma attained perfection. Offering his obeisances, Brahma bathed the feet of Krishna with his tears of joy. Krishna responded to all of this by exhibiting an extremely grave mood. As the puppet master of this entire pastime, Krishna moved everyone and everything according to his own desire. He enacted the drama to show the whole universe a wonderful display of his transcendental energy. So this Krishna's Brahma and all the coward boys and cows, and we ourselves are simply puppets in Krishna's lila. He's pulling on the strings, making us dance and move. Realizing the severity of his offense, Brahma offered obeisances again and again at the lotus feet of the Lord. Then Brahma, his head bent low and his body trembling, very humbly glorified Krishna with faltering words. So then Brahma spoke in Brahma Stuti, which we gave classes on. This pastime is also recounted by Gargacharya, who is the Kula Guru of Nanda Maharaj, and of course performed the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram and Gokul. In his Garga Samhita, he also tells about this pastime. Now this is Garga Samhita, chapter 7, Kidnapping the Calves and Coward Boys. Krishna said, "Oh, we've been playing now and pasturing the calves for 3 hours. Now it's time to take lunch. Let us take our meal here. The place of soft sand is very good for taking our lunch. The calves will drink the Yamuna water, then go to eat the new grass over there." Hearing Krishna's words, the boys said, "So be it." And they all sat down on the riverbank to have lunch. Some boys who had not brought lunch whispered in Krishna's ears, "We didn't bring any lunch." There's always a few boys like that in school. They show up without their lunch boxes. "Oh, I forgot my lunch box." They bum a few cheese crackers from this one and that one. Get a half a sandwich from this one and that one. A little milk, and this way they pass their lunch. "Well, Krishna, we came so far from Nanda's village with our calves." And Krishna said, "Listen, friends, don't worry. Don't lament. I will carefully give lunch to everyone. All you boys just follow my words." On Krishna's orders, all the boys assembled around him, put down their cowarding robes, and ate lunch in his company. With the Gopa boys dressed in garments of many colors, Krishna made a royal circle with himself dressed in yellow in the center. They made lunch trays out of flowers, grass, twigs, leaves, fruits, rocks, rope, or their hands, and the boys ate. One boy suddenly gave a morsel of food to Krishna, and Krishna ate it. And he glanced at everyone and said, "Oh, friends, I don't know anything more delicious than this." Then the boy said, "Yes, it's so." Then the boy gave morsels of that food to the others. Now it's Krishna's Mahaprasad. Laughing and joking, the boys ate. Then Subal gave a morsel of food to Krishna. Krishna tasted that morsel and laughed. All the boys then tasted that food and also laughed aloud. The boy said, "Oh, Nandanandan, Subal's bewildered grandmother does not know how to cook. That was not delicious at all." So every coward boy is taking a turn giving something from his tiffin to Krishna to eat and then sharing it with everyone else. And Sridham, Radharani's older brother, he gave a morsel of his food to Krishna and then the other boys. Then all the boys and brothers declared, "This is really good. Sridham's bhog is really good." Then Varutapa, he earnestly gave a morsel to Krishna and all the other boys. When they ate it, Krishna and all the boys laughed. The boys said, "This is Varutapa's food is like Subal's. By eating this, we have become very unhappy in heart." In this way, they shared their lunch with each other. Laughing and making each other laugh, the boys enjoyed pastimes. Tucked into the cloth about his waist was Krishna's flute, stick, and horn. In his left hand, a morsel of food, and between his fingers, pieces of fruit. He had his crown on his head and a cheddar over his shoulder, forest garland on his chest, a belt around his hips and anklets on his feet. Krishna is making all his friends laugh with his jokes. And the people of Swargaloka and other higher planets were gazing on his pastime with great wonder. As the boys for whom Krishna was the lord of their lives ate, the calves, being greedy for more grass, went far away deep into the forest beside the Yamuna. Seeing that, the gopis became frightened. And Krishna said, "Listen, don't go. I shall bring the cows back here. You just wait." Krishna stood up, taking a morsel of food in his hand, and left to search the caves and forests for the calves. Meanwhile, while Krishna and the boys were taking lunch, Lord Brahma was gazing at this sight of Krishna happily eating lunch with the boys in the riverbank. As he was gazing at Krishna, Brahma was thinking, "This Krishna must be a gopa. He cannot be Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. Why would Lord Hari enjoy such wretched food along with the gopas of Braj?" After thinking this way, Brahma became bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency. As he stood in the sky, Brahma stole all the calves and boys and disappeared. Not seeing the calves returning to the riverbank, and not seeing the gopis, and then searching in the forest for both of them, Krishna thought, "This must be Brahma's work." Krishna then turned himself into all the calves and boys. And he returned to Nanda's village. The many gopas, who were all Krishna now, led the various calves, who were also Krishna, to their respective goshalas. Then the gopas entered their respective homes. And hearing the sound of the flute, the elderly gopis fainted, then suddenly stood up. As milk flowed from their breasts, each embraced her son, who was actually Krishna. Similarly, the calves, seeing their calves, the cows mooed excitedly. The mother cows licked their calves with their tongues and made the calves drink their milk. Thus, all the gopis and cows became Krishna's mothers. Their love for their children became four times what it had been. So this is another nice instruction from Garga Rishi. And now that Krishna had become their son, their love that they had previously had for their own sons and daughters increased by fourfold, 400% increase. It would be nice if we could get 10% increase. If the Grihasthas could increase their love for Krishna 10% more than their own children, just by that percentage increase or that transferal of attachment, the Grihasthas would definitely go back to Godhead. 400 times more love they were displaying for Krishna than their own sons. Well, that should be the formula. Whatever love we show for our beloved children as Grihastha Vaishnavas, we should show 400 times more for Krishna. 400%, four times. The millions of gopi girls were all deeply in love with Krishna. Oh, the millions of gopi girls, this is the young gopis now, who were all deeply in love with Krishna, were married to the many gopa boys who were at that time all forms of Krishna. So Yogamaya, Purnamasi arranged, she told all the elderly coward mothers and fathers that this is a very, very good year for marrying. It was only one moment of Brahma's time, but it was 1 year of Krishna's time. So during that year, Krishna actually married all the gopis of Braj. And they're always that way. So they all got married. In the circle of Braj, 1 year passed with Krishna disguising himself as the calves and gopas. He was the calves and he was the gopas, protecting the calves. On a day when there were only 5 nights remaining to complete the year, Krishna and Balaram went together to the forest to herd the calves. On the summit of Govardhan, the cows ran to their calves, licked their bodies, and gazed at them. Meeting the gopa men, when they met their children, the young and old were flooded with tears of love. Seeing everyone so affectionate, Balaram could not understand. And he was thinking, "What is this? Everyone's so affectionate, and their love seems to be increasing day after day. Is this some illusion thrown over these calves and boys by the devas, Gandharvas, or Rakshas?" No one but Krishna can bewilder me. Thinking deeply, Balaram closed his eyes. Then with his divya drishti, he saw the past, present, and future. He saw that all the cows and gopas had become dark, sham-colored coward boys, each decorated with a flute, stick, and coward, and peacock feathers. Brigamuni's footprint, necklaces of flowers, jewels, gunja, lotus, water lilies, turbans, crowns and splendid earrings endowed with curly locks of hair, making showers of bliss with the glances of their autumn lotus eyes, more handsome than a million Kamadevs. In other words, he realizes that this is Krishna. As Balaram was speaking, Brahma came there and saw in Krishna and Balaram the calves and the gopas. And he said, Krishna brought back all the calves and gopas they took away. Brahma then left and saw that they were still where he had hid them. Seeing them all still asleep, all those calves and boys, he returned again to Krishna and gazed at Krishna and saw all the gopas there. Astonished, he thought, this is a great wonder. Where did all these boys come from now that they're playing with Krishna like before? Was it for me only a moment? What is for me only a moment is a year on earth. I don't understand. How are they still manifested as before? So this way, blinded by Krishna's illusion, Brahma could not even see his own body. What happened to Brahma, the master of the universe, after he stole the gopas and calves? That creator Brahma became like a firefly standing before the son of Sri Krishna. Brahma stood there stunned and bewildered. Krishna mercifully removed his illusory potency. With the eyes of knowledge, Jnana Chakshush, Brahma devotedly gazed at the cows and gopa boys and saw that they were all Sri Krishna. And then Brahma saw that the entire universe and all inside and outside of his body, including his own self, was the potency of Vishnu. He became stunned. He looked like an unmoving tulsi plant in the Vrindavan forest. Aware that Brahma had no power to continue gazing at the Lord's glories, Krishna at once pulled the curtain of his illusory potency. Then Brahma fell asleep. Awakening, he opened his eyes and he saw Vrindavan and himself also. Now he is peaceful. He saw a charming, beautiful Vrindavan where there's no envy and no enmity, where deer play with tiger cubs and mourning doves of peace play with eagles and snakes play with the mongoose. There's no envy there. There are natural enemies in the material world. Deer and tigers, doves and eagles, snakes and mongoose. Brahma saw Krishna with a morsel of food in his hand, searching for his calves and friends in Vrindavan forest, gazing at Krishna, and suddenly understanding that Lord Hari was the beloved of Golok, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, now disguised as an ordinary gopa. Brahma became afraid for what he had done. To beg pardon from the Lord, Brahma descended from his swan carrier, slowly approached Krishna, bowed down with a stream of tears, offering arghya, fell down like a stick at the feet of the Lord. Compassionately, Krishna pulled up Brahma, lifted him up and comforted him, and gently touching him as a lover touches his beloved. Krishna, his eyes wet with nectar, glanced at the many demigods now standing far away. When the demigods received Krishna's merciful glance, they called out, Jai, Jai, bowed down and offered prayers. Pleased with them, Krishna offered them all respect. Falling to dandavats before the Lord with choked voice, Brahma offered his prayers. Well, this is a slightly different version of this leela by Gargacharya. And there's some notes we have here that when Krishna was taking his lunch on the banks of the Yamuna with all his coward boys in this chapter 13, the thousands of coward boys were not only facing Krishna, But each one was sitting so close to Krishna that when they were enjoying one particular milk sweet that was most delicious, each coward boy could get up and extend his hand and put it directly into Krishna's mouth, or he could just extend his hand without getting up from their seats. Well, this is really mystic power. It's inconceivable to our sophisticated brains, yet these boys were sitting in so many circles and were definitely keeping certain distances from each other. Though there were so many circles were there, yet each boy from any point of his circle could find himself nearest to Sri Krishna, and that Krishna was sitting right in front of him. So Krishna is personal with every devotee. He's right there. He's not like, oh, where is Krishna in the distance? Thousands and millions of devotees, circles and circles, this circle of this parampara, and the circle of that parampara, the Chaitanya Saraswat parampara, Nityananda parampara, Shamananda parampara. But everyone gets the opportunity to be face to face with Radharani, face to face with Krishna. You want to offer some tambul to Radharani, to Rupa Mandri and Rati Mandri, they're right there. It's not like they're das, 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 sana, das. No one was to the right or left of Krishna. Each boy found that Krishna was facing him directly. This is possible only on the transcendental plane. It's far beyond human reasoning. The day that Brahma stole the calves and boys was Balaram's appearance day, so he wasn't there that day. So he didn't get stolen. He didn't get stolen. But then a year later, he was there. That's why he was amazed. So this Brahma Vimohan, Vimohan means big illusion created by possession of mundane Vedic knowledge. So there's four reasons. Why did Krishna enact the Brahma Vimohan Leela? Four reasons. He enacted the Brahma Vimohan Leela to interact in love with his devotees and to chastise his devotee. The first reason Krishna enacted Brahma Vimohan Leela, because the Braja Gopis always displayed more affection for Krishna than their own children. So there, by this Leela, Krishna fulfilled their long-standing desire to have Krishna as their own child. For 1 year, those mothers, those elderly gopis in Vatsalya Bhav, they got Vatsa, they got the calf-like son Krishna as their own, and they could suckle Krishna on their breasts and bathe him with their breast milk and dress him and feed him and fondle him to their heart's content. That was one reason to reciprocate with the loving desire of his pure devotees. And the second reason was that the cows, the Surabhi cows of Vrindavan, whenever they merely saw Krishna, due to their excessive motherly affection for Krishna, automatically milk would pour from their udders. So to grace these cows, who wanted nothing more than have Krishna, they couldn't imagine Krishna's a human being, and we're pashu, we're animals. How can a human being ever become our calf? It's not possible. But to fulfill their desire, Krishna became their baby calves, their vatsa, and he sucked their udders as their calves for 1 year. The third reason that Krishna performed Brahma Vimohan Leela was to make Brahma understand his inability to realize the super excellent pastimes of the two-armed form of Krishna, even though he possessed mature knowledge of the four Vedas. He was a Chaturvedi. But Krishna wanted to show him that it's not jnane prayasam udupasi namante eva. It's not merely by knowledge of all the Vedas you can understand Madhuryamayi Purushottam Sri Krishna Vrindavan, Purnatam Bhagavan. The fourth reason was to understand so that Brahma would understand the stupidity of his egotism, thinking he was the creator and control of the universe. Now this little footnote about the gopis, that Krishna, why Krishna was so impelled to take the form of their sons. Because every day in Aparan Leela, from 3:36 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon, Uttara Goshta Leela, When Krishna returns from cow herding, brings all the cows and calves, in this case calves, because he hadn't started taking out the cows. When he brings them back to Nandalaya, to the Goshalas, and milks them and cleans them and feeds them and prepares them for the night. And every evening in the Saparan Leela, late afternoon, the elderly gopis, every day they used to stand at the outskirts of Vrindavan to receive Krishna and his returning, along with his returning comrades. Each elderly gopi in Vatsalya Bhav actually hurried to Krishna first and embraced him. So he was a cynosure of their eyes, the focus of all their hearts, feelings and attention. And they're all, of course, their sons were also there, but they ran to Krishna and embraced him. It's kind of like the devotees after walking 1 month from Navadvip Mandal on their way to Jagannath Puri for Snan Yatra and Rath Yatra and all the utsavs of Jagannath Dev. When they finally got there after an arduous journey crossing so many rivers and taxes and pirates and so many difficulties in those days walking by foot, when they finally got there, they didn't even go for Darshan of Jagannath. They ran right by the temple and straight on down the Swargadwara Road. Swargadwara Sahi, right down the Swargadwara Road, past the Jagannath Singadwara Gate and straight on down, took a left turn and went to the Gambira, Radhakant Mat, to the house of Kashi Mishra. They went to Radhakant Mat to take darshan of their beloved Gauranga. Baja Gauranga Kaha Gauranga Loho Gauranga Namare. Gauranga! 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 Jai Jagannath. They just went by, folded hands, Jai Jagannath. And when they got there, Lord Chaitanya said, "You took darshan of Jagannath, Rajendranandan Shamsundar." He said, No, we'll forget about that. And Lord Chaitanya said, "What? All right, listen, go take your Mahodadi Snan, bathe in the sacred Tirtha, Mahatirtha of the ocean, and then take darshan of Jagannathji and come here for Jagannath Mahaprasad. I want to be with you and serve all of you Mahaprasad." In the same way, the mothers, the elderly gopis in Vatsalya Bhava, they had such intense affection for Krishna, as everyone should and everyone hopes to attain. Another nice lesson, although they had their children, their main affection, their fullest attachment, attraction, and attention was for Krishna. Prabhupada often said that the art of grihastha life, what is the art of grihastha life? It is to show affection to your family members. Wives should show affection to their husbands and children. Husbands should show affection to their wives and children, but not attachment. We can show affection, but our attachment should be for Krishna. And our attached affection or our affectionate attachment should be reposed fully centered on Krishna and his happiness, his comfort, satisfaction, bliss. Of course, that's not easy. If you're showing affection to someone, it's because you're attached to them. If you're attached to them, naturally you show affection. So to show affection without attachment, that's a trick. That's not easy. How to show affection without becoming attached? Because if you receive affection from someone, then you become attached. If someone serves you humbly and lovingly and attentively and dutifully and regularly and efficiently and effectively, then you become attached to that person, to their service, to their bhav, to their love. And they become attached to serving you. So these gopis of Braj, they're teaching us that we're married, we have our husbands, our families and children, our houses, everything like you do. But when Krishna comes, we run first to Krishna. Okay, our children, hello Subal, hello Krishna. And they scoop up Krishna in their arms and embrace him tightly and smother him with kisses and moisten him with their breast milk and tears of love. And then they think, and then with great difficulty they release him. As Mother Yashoda comes and takes her darling, Mother Yashoda says, "Excuse me, can I have my son now?" "Oh yeah, sorry, I'm sorry. Take your Nandalal, take your Yashoda Dulal. I know he's your Yashoda Nandan, but anyway, gee whiz, I wish he was mine. At least I can hug him for a minute. Don't mind." And Mother Yashoda is gracious and a mood of sharing. She's not selfish or egoistic. "Okay, you love my son, it's natural, everybody loves him, but he is my son, so let go." "I also want to smother him with kisses and wrap him in my loving embrace and smell his sweet head and take him home and see if he's all right." But now, when Krishna expanded to become all the coward boys, the gopis rushed. They rushed right by Krishna. Like every day when Krishna would come, all the coward boys who were their sons, actual sons, they would just rush by their own sons and go to Krishna first and embrace him. And now, when Krishna had become, expanded himself to become all their sons, Sri Ram, Subal, Stoka, Krishna, Gobata, Mandali, Bhadra, Bal, etc. Then they said, they went, oh, Haribo Krishna, they ran right by. They had such excessive affection for their sons, the affection of their sons, plus their affection for Krishna, all combined into one. Krishna is their son. So they picked him up and embraced their own boys, which are actually Krishna. So this 1 year to the gopis of Braj, this went by like the twinkling of an eye. It went by so fast. That's a nice point about the about this. In this Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his wonderful illumination about the pastimes of Braj, there's the Madhuryamayi Leelas and Aishwaryamayi Leelas, Naimittik Leelas and Nitya Leelas overlapping and going on together in Vrindavan. There's occasional Leelas, like demon killing is Naimittik or occasional. And then there's Nitya Leelas, like coming and going to the cows and swimming in Yamuna and Banvihar and Uljantali and taking prasad together with the coward boys, and the rasa dance and swimming and splashing water. These are all Nitya Leela, Hastakali Leela. And there's also these Naimittik Leelas. So he says these Naimittik Leelas are killing demons in Braj, which is happening in a tangible way, real way. Nagasura, Bakasura, Putana, Bakasura, Trinavarta, Shakatasura, etc., Kaliya. They represent obstacles, impediments, and anarthas to Braja Bhajan that plague the sadhaka, the aspiring devotee who's doing bhajan, sadhana bhakti, shravana kirtan vishnu smaranam, and trying to absorb himself in Radha and Krishna's service in various ways, especially in remembering and deeply remembering the pastimes and qualifying himself to receive the mercy to realize his own siddhadeya and serve the Lord in a particular vav. He has to overcome these gross and subtle obstacles and anarthas which affect his body and senses. They affect his mentality and they affect his heart and emotions. Vidaya Durabalyam. The weakness of heart. There are so many obstacles there. There are so many weaknesses in our mentality, our intellect, our intellectual reasoning, our reasoning and understanding, and our mentality. There's so many weaknesses and obstacles there on that level. There's so many heart weaknesses, just gross sensual attachment, lust and envy and greed. And then that's in the emotional heart level. And then there's the mental obstacles. So these demons, they represent these obstacles. So this, of course, Brahma is a devotee, not a demon. But this bewilderment and this distress that he caused Krishna is considered to represent some bad tendency that we may have as sadhakas that Brahma was displaying. So in Sri Chaitanya's Shikshamrita and Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these in almost like an allegorical way, that they have some meaning, some higher philosophical meaning, more than just the meaning of the story. As we said, every verse of the Bhagavatam has three levels of analysis. On Krishna's level, our level, and the intermediate level of the elements of the story, the Adi-Daivik level, which is a transcendental Divya or Daivik level. Krishna, it's Krishna's Leela, what Krishna is doing with his devotees for his pleasure and for their instruction or for their happiness and enlivenment. How he's interacting with his devotees to teach them or to reciprocate with their love. That's his the Leela for his purpose and his particular on his level. Then there's the Adhyatmika level, how this Leela or pastime applies to us. What is it teaching to us? What is the benefit? What is the application in our own lives as sadhakas? Then the Adhibhautika level, which is the elements of the story, what's being told, where, when, who, how, and what's being told there in a general way. So Brahma Vimohan Leela, it has its meaning and import for Brahma and his lesson and Krishna's interaction with his As I mentioned, these four reasons he enacted this Brahma Vimohan Leela. Two are for Brahma to instruct his devotee, his wayward devotee, his egoistic devotee, the rather foolish Brahma. And two purposes were to interact with his Nitya Parishads, the mother cows and the mother gopis. So the Brahma Vimohan Leela, it represents the illusory enchantment of Brahma, represents the skepticism that may arise because of attachment to the paths of jnana and karma, and further represents disregard for the superior sweetness of Krishna from over-attachment to the Lord's majestic aspect. Dissipated by Krishna, this offense is to be avoided. So the similar point, we'll explain this, we'll just read from Krishna Samhita. Because here in Krishna Samhita, he explains in chapter 8, Bahu Shastra Vicharena Shanmoho Vartate Satam Saiva Saptamo Lakshyo Brahmano Mohane Kila. This is text 19, and his own compilation of these shlokas and the translation. If one, Brahma Vimohan Leela represents this, if one intensely absorbs his mind in various arguments, opinions, and their respective literatures that support such arguments and opinions, then, by this absorption, all the realizations that one may attain through the samadhi of devotion are practically lost. This is called illusion based on the flowery words of the Vedas. Being overwhelmed with this illusion, Brahma doubted the supremacy of Krishna. The Vaishnava should regard this illusion as a seventh obstacle. So he's listing it as a particular obstacle. So this represents, Brahma Vimohan Leela represents mundane activities, because he says karma and gyan. Mundane activities and speculative scholasticism. So the Brahma Vimohan Leela, by reading this and studying it and praying for the mercy of Brahma to get the realizations that he had and to become humble and submissive before the Lord like he became, and receive the anugraha and mercy and lesha anugraha, a drop of mercy from Lord Krishna, we pray to Krishna to give us a drop of mercy. Because it says this removes skepticism that arises in one due to the cultivation of karma and jnana, and it removes the tendency to be attached to awe and veneration, Aishwarya, and thereby disregard the sweetness of love or Madhurya. One must avoid or overcome this offense if he wants to perform Braja Bhajan and attain pure love for Krishna, Krishna Prem, or Radha Govinda Yugal in the growth of Brajabhumi. So skepticism. What is skepticism? Skepticism means the inclination to question or doubt accepted opinions and beliefs. A person who doubts the truth of a particular religion is a synonym for a skeptic, as an atheist. In this regard, someone may be attached to the Aishwarya, the grandeur, the power, the majesty of God. Disregard the sweet, intimate aspect of Krishna as a coward boy, this Madhurya Mahi Bhagavan, which Brahma was doing. He understood that God is great, that He is the Supreme, that He is my origin. I am created by Narayan, and this must be some form of Narayan, this Krishna. But he had disregard. Disregard means to pay no attention to or to ignore. So this, of course, is an anartha. This complicated. We get too smart. We learn so much and we start to doubt. He who casts words of doubt does put the light of knowledge out. In Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying. He says, he who casts words of doubt does put the light of knowledge out. So we doubt, even there's philosophers, Western philosophers, that their whole philosophy is doubting. Doubting Thomas. In the Bible they have the doubting Thomas. St. Thomas is always doubting. Is Jesus the Son of God? Is there a God? Doubts. So whatever knowledge we may acquire can be snuffed out by continual doubting. Well, what about this and what about that? Why is this and why is that? At some point, we have to accept the inconceivability of the Lord, the Achintya Shakti of the Lord, and simply surrender and submit and serve in a humble way. And by the mercy of Krishna and Guru and Vaishnavas, gradually all the intricacies and what seems to be incongruent or controversies will be rectified and clarified by that drop of mercy. And it's mercy and mercy alone by which we can understand the Supreme Lord. So this is the conclusion of Brahma's teaching. We should not fall prey to this anartha, skepticism, mundane knowledge, mundane activities, karma and gyan, and simply take shelter of Vrindavan, take shelter of Vrijvasis and honor them, pray to them, as Brahma did. Brahma was enchanted by the Vedas and by the flowery words of the Vedas. This is an obstacle to Ruchi. This is an obstacle to Krishna Bhakti. Lord Chaitanya explains that in Shikshastakam. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam ba. Sundara kavi, beautiful poetry. Kavi means poetry. Sundar means beautiful, flowery, attractive, colorful. The colorful, flower-like, colorful, sweet words of the Vedas. If one becomes attached to these and starts to become a jnani or a speculator on the strength of Sanskrit knowledge, he may think he knows so much and doubt his guru or doubt the Vedas, doubt the supremacy of Krishna, emphasize the Aishwarya aspect or even the Brahmanic or Brahman aspect over the Madhurya aspect of Krishna. Then he'll be completely bewildered or enchanted, captivated like Brahma, Brahma Vimohan. So this tendency to get too smart or to know it all, or to ask so many questions. You oftentimes see that in devotees that have scientific backgrounds. They study university. Well, scientists say like this, and they say like that, and your Bhagavatam says like this, or our Bhagavatam. They say your Bhagavatam, but it's our Bhagavatam. They're also devotees. It reminds me of a morning walk where Srila Prabhupada was with his disciple, the Bhakti Surdamadhar Swami, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, Scientists say that life comes from matter. They say, and Prabhupada stopped and he said, you say, they say, I say, we say. So you're quoting your authority, these limited scientists with imperfect senses, subject to illusion, make mistakes, and the cheating propensity. You're saying, they say. Well, what do they say? This is not science. They're always changing and modifying. New improved edition. They're always changing their formulas. New discovery. Pluto used to be a planet. Now Pluto is not accepted as a planet. Pluto and Uranus. They're always changing and modifying because their knowledge is not fixed. It's not perfect. It's not absolute. So perfect knowledge can only come from a perfect person. And that perfect person is the absolute truth or someone in direct connection with him. So the rishis are beyond mistake. They're infallible personalities. So they can actually represent the absolute and give perfect absolute knowledge. The Prabhupada is saying our scientists are the great rishis, the Mahajans and the Shastras. And you say they, the scientists say. I say we, the great Acharyas and Mahajans of the Shastras say, give this description of reality. So whom should we believe? Your imperfect scientists who don't really know the science, or our perfect spiritual scientists who have not only know the science, they've realized the science, and they've seen the science. They've seen the scientist because they've had such a darshan of the supreme scientist, darshan of Sri Krishna. And this way, Prabhupada would remove the illusion of his disciples by bolstering their faith in the Vedas and bolstering their faith in the Mahajans. So we should not disregard or not pay any to the superior sweetness of Krishna, be it attached to his majestic aspect. And this is the conclusion of the Brahma Stuti and Brahma Vimohan Lila. And we should go away with some interesting realizations and knowledge and determination to improve our practices of bhakti. This pastime of the bewilderment of Brahma and the subsequent purification that he experienced will free us from the tendency to cultivate mundane karma and gyan, and also rectifies, reading this chapter 13 and 14 can help rectify the offense of disrespecting Krishna's Madhurya feature in favor of his Aishwarya feature. Sometimes devotees get in that mood also. So I like Krishna Dwarka. I like Krishna Kurukshetra. I've heard devotees say like this. They say, I don't like this Krishna Vrindavan. It's not proper. I like Krishna Dwarka. He's married. He has queens. He's following the rules and regulations. He's rising early, Brahma Muhurta. Krishna Vrindavan, Krishna gets up at sunrise. He's dancing until 2, sleeping until 6. During Brahma Muhurta, he's sleeping. And he runs back home and jumps in bed just before sunrise. And so he's not getting up with the roosters. He's not even getting up when his mother comes and rubs his belly and says, get up. And then Mother Manga says, get up, everyone's waiting for you. So he's really late to get up. In Banki Bihari Temple in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't get up until 10 o'clock in the morning. The Mangal Arati is at 11 o'clock in the morning in the summer, winter and 10 in the summer. And we ask him, why is it so late? And he said, Krishna's out late. In the Rasa dance in Nidibhan, yeah, he takes rest at 2, he has to get his 8 hours. Takes rest at 2 o'clock, he gets his 8 hours sleep and gets up at 10. What is all this Mangal Arati? So, Banki Vihari Lal Ki. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Brahma Stuti Ki Jai. Brahma Stuti Lecture Samapt Ki Jai. Purushottam 2010 Ki Jai. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Shanti.